Welcome to the monologue. Here at the monologue, we take a thematic deep dive into the works of Mike Flanagan, exploring recurring motifs, creative processes, and collaborations in the Flaniverse. And of course, the monologue. My name is Cecilia, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kelsey and Riley. Say hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We are focusing again on another monologue, and this time a set of two monologues. And that is
for today.
Aaron Green's What Happens When You Die monologues from Midnight Mass.
They go together, though. Wow. So even though it's two monologues, it's like one super monologue.
So for those who are not familiar with Midnight Mass, what is Midnight Mass?
So Midnight Mass is...
It's when you go to Mass at midnight on Easter.
I mean, yes. That is kind of part of the title, or like that is like the Midnight Mass that is in the title. But it starts off... How much detail? Well, it's not really a spoiler because it's been out for how many years now? Like,
we're talking about the whole show, so if you haven't seen it yet.
All right, so
spoilers, you've been warned.
The series starts with a character named Riley Flynn, and at the very beginning of the show, he is arrested for drunk driving, and he hit and killed someone. So that's what you see right away. And then his character is kind of wrestling with sobriety, fighting sobriety. Throughout, he comes back from his job. Is it like New York City? Did we find
Chicago,
out where he is? Chicago?
I think. Big city. Somewhere.
The big city
on the mainland. City. And he returns to the island, Crockett Island, where he grew up. He is like reacquainted with Aaron Green, who was like his childhood love interest, who has also returned. She had left the island and came back to escape an abusive relationship, and the island receives a new priest at their little church around the time that Riley returns, and then bizarre things and miracles begin occurring, and you find out as the show goes on that maybe there's more of a sinister element to these changes than actual miracles.
Yeah.
Well, that was a really good sum up of the show. If I hadn't seen it already, I would be, you know, thrilled to watch that.
It's very much Mike Flanagan's answer to Stephen King's Salem Lot. Like, Midnight Mass might be the best Salem's Lot adaptation that we've ever gotten that was not actually a Salem's Lot adaptation.
Spiritual adaptation.
Did anybody watch the Salem's Lot that finally showed
up? I did.
Up on HBO?
It was not good.
Yeah, I heard it was bad.
Yeah, it was a huge letdown. It sucked that we had to wait so long for something that seems like studios just interfered with until it turned into generic slop.
It had some really cool, like cinematography, I guess you would say. Like, some of the way that some of the shots were done was really cool, but it just... The casting was not great. It took a big swing and it didn't make it.
And a big old miss.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because we've got this now.
Yes.
This is a limited series. It's on Netflix. Came out in 2021. It's seven episodes. If you got Netflix, you can go watch it right now. Let's jump into the monologues. So we've got two monologues that take place in two different episodes, but are very much the same theme. Our first
episode.
The first monologue happens in episode 4, Lamentations. It's between Aaron and Riley. It's after Aaron has lost her child. She was pregnant. And then all of a sudden she's not pregnant. So it's her dealing with the grief of losing her child, and she and Riley have this really beautiful conversation about what they think happens when they die.
It's a curtain call. Dreamed and dreams. One last great dream as my mind empties the fucking missile silos, and then... I stop.
And that's what we mean when we say heaven. No mansions, no rivers of diamonds or fluffy clouds or angel wings. You are loved. And you aren't alone.
They're really light ones, so glad we're doing these today.
A lot to unpack there.
Yeah, they're definitely monologues, I think, of both grief and also of kind of, like, wishes. Like, it's both about Riley dealing with feeling like he needs to serve a purpose because of all the terrible he did in the world. So he doesn't go on pretty much after he's dead, but his body is used. And then Aaron's, which is she unexpectedly lost a child. And it is kind of that thing when you lose somebody, you just kind of, you hope it's not completely over because you do really do kind of want to see them again. And you want them to be happy.
Well, I think that's just heaven in general is wishful thinking. And I think, yeah, I don't know. I really like the way that Aaron describes it and the way that in the juxtaposing monologue that she has at the end, it's very different what she believes for herself than what she wishes for her lost daughter. I also really like in both Riley and Aaron's monologues, they compare different parts of existence or non-existence to dreaming, because it is, it's like, what, I don't know if other people feel like this, but I don't feel like I never existed. I feel like I was kind of in a dream and then woke up and started existing, like, with every other conscious thing, and it's probably just going to be a cycle that repeats, because we're all energy and just being recycled through the cosmos.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, like, going to sleep. Like, yeah. As soon as you fall asleep, you just kind of, like, wake back up. You don't really remember that time being asleep, unless you have some wild dreams. But even those are happen pretty quickly.
Who did my girlfriend go on an Alaskan cruise with in her dream the other night? Some YouTuber. Spooky Astronauts, if anyone watches her on YouTube. Yeah, it sounds fun. But dreams are weird, man.
Mm-hmm. I used to keep a dream diary of all the weird dreams that I had because I had so many bizarre ones.
Oh my god, you should dig it out one day. I definitely want to hear about them.
This is a little off topic. My grandpa used to say that if you were a very creative person and you didn't have enough creative outlets in life, that would seep into your dreams. And so he always said when you had really bizarre dreams, that was like your creative outlets trying to go to work.
Interesting. Oh, wow.
I mostly just have anxiety dreams.
Me too.
Yeah. So.
I like the theory that dreams are like your brain trying to dissect like the day and figure out like what's going on.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. My dreams are always pretty wacky, but also very easy for me to usually interpret. Be like, oh, I dreamed of this because I'm stressed out about this.
Yeah, like you can usually kind of tell like, oh, this is a problem that I'm facing in life. And so this is how my brain decided to interpret it in the dream.
All of my dreams, my stress dreams, I am lost somewhere or late for something.
So, always. I'm always late. Yeah. Late dreams are the worst.
I can't remember if it was last night or if it was the night before that I was lost and I couldn't figure out how to get back to where I needed to go and my GPS wasn't working. And so, like, I, like, threw out one of those, like, in Roger Rabbit, the Roger Rabbit ride at Disney, he throws out this, like, hole to, like, this, like, here's a black hole. This will save you. And so I threw that out. And so I, like, drove through. It looked like I drove through the building, but I didn't. I went through the hole, God. And I ended up where I needed to be. It was so weird.
You created, like a time-space,
like, what a is tunnel it, a wormhole? That, yeah.
Like a Looney Tunes, like, yeah, secret passageway.
But anyway, so back to the monologues.
Yeah. I mean, I think dreaming is actually something that does all these monologues, I think, have in common, especially like Erin's monologue talking about her daughter's afterlife. Is she talks a lot about dreams. And I mean, in her big monologue at the end, it's, you know, where the cosmos is dreaming of itself. So I think dreams are like very prevalent.
I mean, that is true. Yeah. I mean, again, because her child like was never born, and so she wouldn't have any actual experiences like to think on. So like dreaming or unconsciousness is the only thing that it knows.
Yeah, she was never awake. You know, she was just dreaming until God called her back up, and then she got to wake up in heaven in this beautiful land where everybody loves her and there's only good things. And
Erin's mom is certainly not there, because she makes it a point to not say her mom is in heaven.
Yeah,
I noticed like, that.
My grandfather, my great grandma. That's
the people who didn't abuse me are there. You don't have to deal with my alcoholic mom. So that was pretty nice, as wishful thinking goes.
Yeah. I mean, both her and Riley are definitely going through grief, and I think that also kind of shapes their monologues. I mean, Riley's, I think, is very obvious that he regrets, you know, having gotten drunk and getting behind the wheel of a car and accidentally taking a life. And it's something he really grapples with. So his monologue being all about, like, I need to make amends. I need to pay service. I don't care what really happens to myself. My consciousness is irrelevant compared to the harm I need to make up for.
Riley regrets, like, choices that he made. Like, he could have made other choices, and so he feels responsible for what happened. But the situation with Erin... spoiler alert, I guess, for people who haven't seen the show. The baby dies because the priest who's on the island is putting, they don't use the word vampire, but basically vampire blood.
It's vampires.
In like the communion wine. And so Erin had ingested that from going to church. And so the vampire blood decided to, like, it was
heals
kind of like
body. So yeah, it views the baby as a parasite.
Yeah.
So it gets rid of it.
So, I mean, that's not really like she would not have foreseen that, like, going to church would lead to the baby disappearing or dying.
Which I think is a great metaphor for, like, hey, man, sometimes you're trying to do this thing with good intentions, but there's just so much evil within the system already that it's going to destroy you in ways you never could have thought of. Anyway, fuck the
religion,
Catholic Church.
She wild.
She crazy.
Oh, we got a cool new pope now, though.
I heard he seems cool. They're getting cooler by the century.
I remember Mike saying in press that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Riley's monologue about what he thinks will happen when he dies is like Mike's own personal view of what he thinks will happen
that
when he dies.
That wouldn't surprise me, because I feel like
Riley
is very much an extension of Mike.
Yeah. And so I feel like that was stated in some interview or something, because he always talks about how the projects that he makes are kind of being like his children can look at them and kind of learn about like his worldview and stuff like that. And so Riley was kind of speaking on his view of death. I think it also is what my fiance thinks. Like he said, when he saw Midnight Mass for the first time, he was like, no one has ever put into words how I feel about what death probably is. I hope that there is something after. So I feel like I relate more to Erin's. So I don't know. That's kind of where we differ. Like he connects more with Riley and I connect more with Erin in that monologue.
I think Erin's last monologue too is, it's a lot like Riley's monologue, but it just goes a little further, because Riley's monologue, because he's dealing with his own actions, is very singular based in his brain, whereas Erin's is very much like more widespread. It is more like literally universal about what happens to us and how we all serve each other.
At least none of those versions of the afterlife are like the one posed in Stephen King's Revival, because that one was terrifying.
I do not know enough about Revival to make a comment. I need to. I'm like a third of the way through it. It's a very long book.
This is just a statement for anyone listening to this right now. If you have not read Stephen King's Revival, I need you to read it. And as you are reading it, like maybe the first like 7/8 of the book, you're going to be like, I don't get why everyone says this is so scary. Like, this is not scary. And then the last like maybe 30 pages, you're going to be like, this is terrifying. And you will just be staring at the ceiling like, wow, I just don't even know. Like, it will cause existential dread. But I highly recommend it.
I found it comforting.
Maddie, what do you think happens when we die?
Maddie, what does happen when we die?
I feel like for animals, it's probably closer to what Erin was describing for her baby. Because, I mean, animals haven't harmed anybody. Like, they're just here
I don't think they have any kind of, like, awareness of death. I think it's, like, I know to stay out of danger because of some kind of just inherent trait that they have. But, like, I don't know. Where's my dog?
Survival. They want to keep surviving.
Survival. That's the word.
Do we want to listen to Erin's last monologue?
Yeah.
Yes.
All things apart. All of us, apart, you, me, and my little girl, and my mother, and my father, everyone who's ever been, every plant, every animal, every atom, every star, every galaxy, all of it. More galaxies in the universe than grains of sand on the beach, and that's what we're talking about when we say God, the One. Cosmos and its infinite dreams.
Oh man,
you said it, Maddie. Was she barking?
Yeah, she barked. She had things to say.
It's just beautiful. Man.
It really is. I feel like that is just one of the most like comforting things I've heard when it comes to processing and just accepting death. And I think this show in general helped me a lot with that.
It really puts things in perspective. Like, I feel like that final monologue is trying to say that, like, all these, like, little petty things, like, in our daily lives that we might think are important, like having the latest whatever it is that you collect, or, like, going on that, like, fancy vacation, or, like, getting that raise or something like that. But I mean, ultimately none of that matters, because it's like, we come from dust, we return to dust. Like,
yeah.
And also I feel like it like advocates for treating other people well, or like having compassion or empathy.
Yeah,
because it's like, we are all the same.
Yeah
it's
that and whole it's like leaves of grass thing where it's like, yeah, you can be one single thing, but you're existing within this entire huge, like, ecosystem, and we have to treat each other well so that we can continue to maintain this. We've lost sight of all of that, so. Like, it's nice to have that message, just
and it's really
where people can hear it.
It's really beautiful, because the first monologue that Erin has doesn't talk about her mom, but in this all-encompassing monologue she has at the end, she does specifically mention, like, we're all from the same kind of material, my mom, my dad. So it is this very beautiful I know Kelsey has seen this. Riley, have you seen 28 Years Later yet?
No, I have not. You can spoil
okay,
it.
Okay, I can't. No, I don't want to spoil it for you.
No,
because
you need to see it.
I can talk around it. That ending scene that has Ray Fiennes in it.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's kind of like the theme you get from that. Riley, once you've seen it, you'll understand. But there's not much more I can say. Don't need to be nervous. I think it's the idea.
It's not anything scary, but it ties in really nicely with this monologue.
Okay. Yeah, it's nothing scary. I think it made me cry.
It was really close, I teared up.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful moment and like a contemplation on life and death and what it means. Mm-hmm. So that's, I got very much remnants of that as well, because I've seen it so recently. But we all are in it together. And we let these silly things kind of pull us apart. But in the end, like, we're all made of star stuff. We're all made of the same thing. And we should take care of each other.
Yeah. And at this point, I feel like, who says, my girlfriend and I were just talking about this, and there's also an episode of Futurama where it happens, but, like, they keep going forward in time, and everything just keeps repeating. Like, it's completely circular. So who says we haven't done all of this before, and we're all literally, like, parts of each other? So why?
Like, either... I mean, yeah. It's like reincarnation and past lives and that kind of thing.
I don't think I clocked it until right now that the song that they chose to go over top of Aaron's monologue at the end is like, it's so good.
Is it the...
It's the same
song. Were you there when they crucified the Lord? And they sing about that. Okay. So it's very much like a song of like sacrifice. And it's exactly like Aaron sitting there. Because she's very much like... She's like kind of like a Christ figure. A lot of them fit this kind of Christ figure mold, where they like willingly give their lives to save everyone else.
Oh, that's what I wanted to point out.
It's not about self.
Yeah,
she did make a sacrifice because she kind of she like distracted and basically let the angel kill her,
and she. The sacrifice she made wasn't for her. It wasn't for the people on the island. It was for people that she did not know, that she knew that if he got away, he would hurt other people. And she's like, I've never met the people on the mainland. Not a lot of them.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know
the people I'm going to save, but it's worth it.
But no, in Riley's monologue, I was going to point out that the wishful thinking that he has, unfortunately, speaking of sacrifices... his body is literally turned to ash. So I don't know how much of that could come true when he's talking about, like, you know, feeding the bacteria in him and all of that. So
his ashes will go in the water and that will feed other things.
And I don't know. It just makes me sad.
Matter cannot be created or destroyed.
Well, that's true.
It can only be recycled. So it's going to end up going into something.
Something else that'll be born. It's like when
and I guess he literally like saved all of those people, so I guess it's fine. His death, it was not in vain.
A supernova exploding and like a black hole will eventually lead to like new nebulas and galaxies, so it is a cycle of like death and rebirth and death and rebirth.
And
space is crazy.
If Riley had not let Aaron know the situation in the boat, then they would not, like, that group of, like, her and Sheriff Hassan and Sarah, I can't remember her last name.
Dr. Sarah,
would not have had, like, the foresight, basically, to organize and do what they needed to do to be able to attack the angel and prevent him from getting off the islands.
Yeah, there's a lot of sacrifices that are made at the end of Midnight Mass.
And I feel like they're all from the people who, like, are actually, you know, believers and not just doing that. Like, Bev Keane is not one of those people where Annie Flynn is, who has shown you, like, who she really is and, like, her beliefs and that she is a good person because she is willing to sacrifice that for her. Not even her son's ex-girlfriend and like some random kids.
I like when Sheriff Hassan's son is the one who throws the flame into the building.
Mm.
He's the one who does it, right? Even though he knows that's the last place he'll be able to go either. He's like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
after his dad gets shot.
There's like the contrast between all these like people who were considered like outcasts in the town, mm-hmm. like that didn't like fit in. And then Bev Keane, who like people kind of view as like this kind of like model religious woman. And then at the end, they're the ones that are all like the outcasts are the ones that are making the sacrifices that actually benefit people. Mm-hmm. And then Bev Keane, spoiler alert, dies cowardly trying to dig a hole in the sand. So it just kind of.
And I think out of those people, other than Aaron, all get a very human death.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that as well, because it just, I think, sticks with that theme.
So what do you all think happens when we die?
God, I knew someone was going to ask this.
I had to. You can't have a monologue about what happens when we die and not ask. What do you think?
All right. Okay.
I'm very much in the belief of Aaron's last monologue. I think, you know, we are the cosmos dreaming of itself. I think that we die and our energy goes into other things. And not only that, but you know, the people you touch in your life, you leave a little bit of yourself with them
mm-hmm.
that they get to carry out into the world. So we're all connected. I don't believe in a like an afterlife. I don't believe in a heaven. I don't believe there is some void that we all get to go hang out in. It would be very cool.
Lounge until we cycled back through, but I
would like to be able to be cycled back in. But
that would be like there's a game that we play at one of the summer camp sites called Nukem, and it's like you have to throw this volleyball over a volleyball net, and if it drops, whoever doesn't catch it is out. But if your team catches the ball again, then you get to come back in. So when you were talking about like cycling and that kind of like what if the afterlife is like a game of Nukem, and it's like I'm on the sidelines waiting for something to happen, and then I'm going back in.
I thought you were going to say, we played this Christian game. And I was like, what game are you playing, Akeem?
No.
Very different.
That just reminds me of like the scene in The Boss Baby where they're just like an assembly line of babies just being sent down to Earth. It's like, that's us just waiting.
I don't think that I necessarily agree in a heaven, like at least not as like a physical place. But I feel like there is something that happens to your consciousness or something. I don't really know what, but like there have been things that happened where it like felt like getting a sign or something from a loved one who had passed. So that makes me think that like maybe their consciousness continues somehow, but I don't know. I think that might be more of me like wishful thinking that something does exist, because it feels like too final to just be like, oh, like they died, they don't exist anymore, you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know, maybe
it's like an what's the movie with Jimmy Stewart, It's a Beautiful Life, where they're all just like clouds. Like the clouds are talking to each other, and they're supposed to be like the angels and stuff talking about like, oh, Clarence, you need to go down to this guy. Here's his backstory, so you know what you're getting into. We're all just clouds like blinking at each other.
Angels.
Maybe.
I think that's where like I'm right in the middle of where you two are, though, because separating like energy and consciousness doesn't make sense to me. Or like keeping them together, I guess, because I feel like they're two different things. So yes, maybe my like
maybe the energy... consciousness goes on.
Yeah,
that I don't know. I feel like I mean it's not like you're gonna exist in like some physical form or like be like an angel or like something like that, but like I feel like there is some way that energy goes on somehow. I don't really understand and it's not something that I would, but
yeah, I want to think it's almost like a horcrux, that like all the things that I touched and whatever, it's just sort of broken up and I have very like fragmented pieces of it, but each piece is still kind of existing on its own, so I still exist just in the grand scheme of things.
Man.
But yeah, I don't know what, I guess, I know that my stepdad died one time, but then came back to life, and he had a DMT fever dream where a nun was giving him a guitar lesson. So maybe that's what happens. I don't know.
There's that book about the kid who's like, I died and then I saw Jesus in sneakers.
Oh, yeah. And then he was like, yeah, my mom told me to say that. And I think they got in trouble. So
it's kind don't of believe like,
that little kid.
I mean, so I don't want to go into like the full details of this book.
Oh, juicy.
No, but like, it's a book. It's not. But like in the Lovely Bones, when they kind of after they die and they can kind of look down on people. Like, I don't know. It would be nice if there's a way that you can kind of look down on people.
Okay, so I think it's nice. But then, like, as someone who is here on Earth, I think if that were true, does that mean that people are watching me do everything?
Masturbate? Is that
like, what do I never have privacy? They're watching me, and all statuses of bodily fluids happening.
I mean, that's like the Truman Show, I guess. I don't know.
Love the Truman Show. It's so good.
But what a nightmare. Oh my God. Can you imagine? Oh my gosh. Watching me scroll on my phone and the weird while I'm pooping and like all the gross stuff I do? No.
Well, and it's just like in the Truman Show, like his wife was like gonna have a baby with him. Like she's essentially like a sex worker in a way. Like, and then that baby is just gonna like also like probably just be followed and watched like a second version of Truman. It's really messy.
I have not seen this movie in so long, but I remember it, yeah, giving me an existential crisis the first time, so I'm good.
So good.
Oh, but speaking of, like, heaven and what it actually, like, yes. would look like or whatever, I do like that in Aaron's monologue, she does point out, like, yeah, we don't need rivers of gold, we don't need a big mansion, like, whatever you people are, like, trying to, you know... It's like the preachers, like Jim Baker, who owned a bunch of cars and stuff and was like making a little heaven on earth, but that's never been the point.
I mean, I think there's something really beautiful about heaven just being that you are loved and you aren't alone. And I'm like, yeah,
that's nice because that is something like you can have that. So even if you don't believe in an afterlife, it's not unachievable, unattainable.
Yeah, and that's really all you need anyway. To be loved.
All you need is love.
Not be alone when you don't want to be. I mean, there's probably people that are like, ah, I just want to be alone, and that sounds terrible to me. But I mean, I'm sure if you wanted to be alone, there was an option. But
hey, if that's your idea of heaven, then have at it. I don't care. As long as you're not hurting people, you're doing, you know, the whole mantra is what can we do for each other? And you know, yeah, I feel like the show's these monologues specifically kind of are a good example of that and a good place to start for people.
I am so bummed, though, that Mike Flanagan is not going to be adapting Revival anymore. It was like, it was in the works like years ago, and then it was called off. But because like that, again, like to go back to that story, there is a character who is like obsessed with like what happens after we die, what happens after we die, and like tries to do all these experiments and stuff.
And that would have been
well, I mean, you do know because there is a conclusion in the book, but
but again, maybe I didn't want to know. You know what? Those cycle through. Mike might come back to the rights at some point, so. You never know. Also, good alternative, Nightmare Alley, I think, had a lot of similarities between the book Revival. Obviously very different, but if you want the same...
Wait, is that Guillermo del Toro?
Yeah. That was...
What year
was that? I think it came out in, like, 2020.
I haven't seen that. I need to watch it.
It's got a lot of similarities in terms of, like, atmosphere and...
But, like... Revival has very different tones. There's like three different parts. So which part is the tone similar?
Oh, the carnival. If you want the carnival stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If you have not read Revival, you need to read it. Just telling everyone.
I'll read it.
Okay. I need to read The Stand.
We should do, once you read Revival, we should do a bonus episode on what we think Mike's adaptation would have looked like if he could have adapted that.
Yes. We could always do a book club as one of our mini monologues. We would just have to assign a book and give ourselves enough time to read it, and then we could talk about it.
Revival is a good one. It's not very long. I remember I got it. We were at a family friend's house for 4th of July like 4 years ago, and I read almost all of it in the pool like within a day, and I just kept thinking like, this isn't scary. Why does everyone say this is so terrifying? This isn't scary. This isn't scary. And then the final 20 pages, and I'm like, so.
Ooh, yeah, there's some parts that I do still think about. The ending. I don't know.
I'm intrigued. Don't tell me.
Yeah, we won't tell you, but Eric and I still reference it. Like, oh my God, this is like Revival-esque. Or like, oh my God, it's like that scene in Revival. Like, it's very memorable.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, stay tuned. We might be doing a book club. Haven't decided yet. We'll let you know.
Or at the very least, a bonus episode.
Hell yes. Let's do it.
Okay. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
All right. That's a wrap. Bye, guys. Bye.